The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
I can add to that that this program is... I just came back from teaching a retreat, and oscillated between saying nothing here. What more could I say? What is there to say? And also somehow speaking from the retreat somehow, and still kind of fresh in my mind. So this is what occurs to me, is first tell you a story that this comes from the ancient Buddhist texts, suttas, that there was a novice monk in the time of the Buddha who encountered a prince. And the prince said to the monk, novice monk, is it really possible, or how does one become unified? And the word unified refers to a meditation, usually a meditation state of concentration, of being settled on oneself. And the idea of unified implies that often people are not unified. You can't hear it out there? Is the speaker system working there? But it's not, because it's pretty loud in here. Can you check the volume there? You check it?
It's a lot of bass. So
what?
We're missing treble.
It's oh, treble.
Bass,
oh,
so it's not
oh, so it's the... Does anybody know how to... Because you probably don't know how to adjust that. Does anybody know how to adjust the soundboard for treble and bass? Because that's, I think that's... Somehow it's gotten misadjusted. No sound people here? So many of you. You should know. Yeah, but it's all there? Yeah, I've turned it off. So let's see. I have to speak, otherwise they don't really know what they're... keep talking. I keep listening to see if it makes a difference, but I can't listen. I have to speak. It's a strange thing. So... I'll see how it's going. Is it getting better?
Yes.
It's getting better.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. It sounds all good out there now? So it sounds good? Is it a little bit loud for me? Can we turn it down a little volume, down a little bit? Because it's echoing there. How's this now? Is it better? Yeah. Is there a reverb? I don't know if there is. Is there a reverb?
Sound effects on this board.
Yeah. But this is better now?
Yes.
I think it's just...
It's too loud. It becomes a problem for me sitting here. But this... Okay. Oh, look at that. Thank you. The... thank you. Okay, so... I'll start my story over again. So this prince, who apparently... this prince came and asked, is it really possible, or how is it possible to become unified? And the word unified is a meditation word for a mind and body that gets settled and collected, with the idea that often people are not collected in themselves, not settled on themselves, and they become fragmented. The mind goes off in many different directions. What we're thinking about could be quite varied. How we're feeling could be varied. There can be a dominant feeling, but all these little feelings kind of are there in the background and operating. There can be carry a lot of attention. There's a lot can be going on, and so sometimes we're working at cross purposes, all the different intentions we have and approaches we have and feelings we have and ideas, and so the mind jumps around a lot. And some of you probably felt that or saw that in the meditation, that you try to get calm and settled and focused here, maybe on the breathing, and the mind had other ideas. You know, all kinds of thoughts came up and you were pulled this way and that way. And so the idea of becoming unified is one of the descriptions and one of the terms for becoming concentrated. And it implies not just simply a, you know, one-pointed focus, but it involves this kind of gathering together of our faculties, of all our kind of various abilities. So it feels like everything within us is working in harmony, working for the same purpose, working together in the same way. And when that kind of sense of absorption or harmony or full engagement with one thing happens, it feels really good. And so this prince asked about it, and the novice monk says, well, I can't really say anything because you won't believe it. And so he said, no, it's okay. If I can't understand it, then I'll just go. You know, I'll just leave you alone. And I said, okay, so I'll tell you. So then the monk explained to him about, yes, it's possible, and this is how it's done. And the prince's reply was, that's impossible. No one can do that. Which was kind of what the monk was afraid of was going to happen. And so the monk went back to the Buddha and told the story to the Buddha. And the Buddha said, well, you could have told a simile. Here's a simile you could have told the prince. And that is, if you go with a friend to the base of a mountain, and you go up the mountain, and there's a beautiful vista. You see, you know, mountains in difference, plains, all kinds of things you can see. And you yell down to your friend, come up here. There's all, this is amazing view from up here. And just come down here and come up here and you'll see vistas and rivers and mountain tops far away and all this great stuff. And then the friend down below says, no, you're crazy. There's nothing up there to see, and refuses to come up. And he said, the prince is like the person who's down at the bottom of the mountain. But if you take your friend and hold their hand or something and take them up to the top of the mountain, then they say, oh, now I see. Now I believe that what's possible. Now you can I can see all this. So the same way, I think it's very difficult for people to appreciate that it's possible even to have the mind gathered and collected and centered in the present moment, where the mind is not out of control. The idea of settling the mind, or the ancient language talks sometimes about taming the mind, like you tame a wild horse or wild elephant. You tame it and settle it so that the horse or the elephant could be used for different things. So the same thing with our mind. If our mind is wild and out of control and thinking about whatever it wants left and right, then you can't apply it in a sense that you can't apply it out of choice to direct it where you want it to go, then it can't be used. It's not workable in the way that... In meditation, we're trying to develop a workable mind, a mind that is, you know, can be applied for insight, for deep understanding. So I need a little sound check because I'm still hearing this echo. I wonder if we can turn the volume down a little bit, see if that makes a difference. How's this now? Is that a little bit better for me? Can you hear now? Yeah? Nice. So, okay, we'll keep trying? Yeah, okay. So, so a workable mind and is a settled mind or a unified mind. And so the way that this is cultivated in Buddhism, meditation practice, is usually by having something which is the primary focus of attention. So an object of concentration, for example. And the most common one in Buddhism is often the breathing. Stay focused on the breath. And it isn't so much the point is to stay with the breath, though that's the vehicle for it. But as you rest and be kind of focused on the breath, then the tendency of the mind to be distracted by all kinds of thoughts and other concerns begins to quiet down. And it's like the energy that's used to be distracted is being poured into staying with the breath. And so no energy is not available for the distractions. And so the distractions begin to settle down. And most people who find meditation calming and settling is because they stop being distracted by all the thoughts that are stressful, that are kind of pulling them off because the mind's not going there anymore. And so as the mind keeps coming back to the breathing, the distracted mind becomes quieter and settles down. And it's really remarkable how far the mind can settle down. As the mind settles, the body settles, and the body becomes quite feeling, very soft feeling in the body to be concentrated and focused and unified. The other way that unification happens is that it has to do with wisdom, and that is to understand in a wise way that it's not useful for you to start thinking in, in end of September how you're going to pay your taxes in April. Or it's not useful just now to think about what you're going to do this weekend. It's not useful when you meditate to start rehearsing what happened in your high school prom, and review the resentments and all the things. You start, there's all these lists of things that the mind can do, some of it which is quite useful, that for the purpose of settling the mind is not useful place to go. And this is a retraining of the mind, because the mind has a very strong tendency to... the reason the mind gets so easily distracted by the thoughts is it thinks those thoughts are important. And so, you might not think it's important, but the mind thinks it's important. Something important is going to be attained, get, understood, be entertained by if we go in that direction. And so if we really understand, no, this is not for my the best for me, is to keep going off in these kinds of thoughts and really see with wisdom how the mind wanders off, and then out of choice decide, no, I'm not going to do that. That helps the settling process. As the mind gets more and more settled, it's kind of like we enter a different world. And the different world is a world that is much softer, that's one of the qualities of it, much more expansive and open, one where we're not so readily looking at the world as if it is a problem. The idea of seeing the world as or ourselves as having a problem begins to abate. The idea of being critical of ourselves begins to quiet down. The idea of being afraid of what's happening, being anxious, quiets down. The resentments we have begin to quiet down. The boredom we have begins to quiet down. All these kinds of forces of the mind that keep us kind of simmering and agitated begin to quiet down. And we can it feels very different to be alive and to be human without all these kinds of painful activities going on, swirling around, keeping us agitated. And so we start having a very different feeling, a sense of who we are. And it's often said it's very healing to really settle down and quiet down and feel oneself for a few minutes to be present without any extra problems, without any layer of self-criticism or judgment or feeling some of the emotional pain we might have in our life. And to feel to have an experience of ourselves that feels really good, like a feeling, like an inner goodness, a sense of purity or well-being or okayness. The language I like to use is to really feel at home with oneself here. And that becomes a re-education for a whole system inside that has learned the opposite. To learn that actually the world is a scary place. To learn that, in order to be successful in life, you have to get a lot of things, be thinking about what you want to get. Or these different perceptions we have of ourselves, that we're a victim, oh, poor me, have self-pity. We start feeling ourselves not as a victim, because that's a thought, a mental construction that quiets down in this unification process. And so as one of the functions of this deeper concentration in Buddhism is to have a radically different experience of ourselves being alive, where just being alive is enough, where we feel fulfilled, we feel a sense of satisfaction, we feel a sense of joy, a sense of inner health, just by sitting here breathing. Nothing has to happen beyond sitting here quietly and breathing. And that's a dramatic lesson for this little mind of ours, a lesson which sometimes we've never learned. Growing up, we've learned through our, you know, maybe the atmosphere of our family to always be afraid or always be angry or worried or always be, you know, competitive. Or, you know, there's all kinds of things we learn that kind of propel us, kind of centrifugal force, out away from the heart, out away from the mind. And so to quiet down, settle, and feel unified becomes a re-education. The Buddhist tradition, when they talk about this state of unification that happens in meditation, they talk about it comes with, it brings confidence to a person. And there's a strong sense of inner confidence that wells up. And oddly enough, the less we get caught up in self-identification, the less we get up in selfish self-concerns, the more confidence wells up from inside. And the language of the tradition is actually this feeling something welling up from inside. One of the metaphors they use in this, as the mind gets collected, is that of a mountain, of a lake that does not get replenished from the rain, does not get replenished from things outside, like a river going in, but the mountain lake gets replenished from an underwater spring. The water wells up from inside and fills the spring from the inside with fresh water. So the same way that we get settled enough and we're not so externally focused anymore and settled here, then this feeling of welling up happens inside, of being refreshed, of being settled. One of the purposes of this kind of experience that is to overcome lust. Not that many of you have asked problems with lust, but it's been known to happen to a few human beings. And, you know, very strong, not just, you know, sexual lust, but all this tremendous drive for sensual pleasure, sensual comfort of all kinds. And that drive is a drive that sends us looking externally for something. We want something outside. And in extreme forms, it becomes an objectification of other people, the objects that we want and we want to relate to, and what those things are going to do for us. And it's a very hard attachment to overcome, that drive for sexual, sensual pleasure. And it isn't that it's wrong or has to be eradicated, but to have it kind of be driving us so there's no freedom is not considered a very healthy thing to do. But the way to kind of, so that one of the functions of concentration practice is to bring a person such a sense of well-being and fulfillment and joy that sexual and sensual pleasure doesn't have the same seductive power because we're so satisfied already, right? I mean, after an orgasm, you usually don't want to do it again, some people, right? It's enough. And so meditation can be as pleasant, as satisfying as an orgasm. Some people say it's much more so because of how deeply, deeply settling and relaxing and peaceful making it's made. It feels. And so in this context of this joy and well-being of meditation, then it puts other desires in a different context. It also puts fear in a different context. It puts a sense of that we're broken or kind of inadequate as a person in a very different context. If we really feel welling up inside, there's a kind of sense of confidence and well-being. So what's required is this unification. And the last thing I'll say about unification, it does involve not being seduced by thoughts. Thoughts themselves are a kind of objectification, to be thinking about things. And so the tremendous power or tremendous strength by which that we invest value in our thinking keeps us in the world of thinking. And we think that we're going to think ourselves out of problems, or we're going to think and solve things. And so to become settled and unified, there's nothing wrong with thinking per se, but we have to stop investing so much value in the world of thinking so we can put it to rest, put it aside, and allow for this deeper settling or deeper opening or this fuller feeling that can only come when we're really kind of at home, deeply at home in ourselves. And then it becomes a different world that we live in. And one of the really wonderful things is to have such a big open heart or mind that feels like a big home, that then you can invite other people to come and join you in it. Isn't that nice? It's really a wonderful, intimate way of being with people when you can invite them or they can be included in this feeling at homeness. That's very different than if we objectify people or want something from people or afraid of people. But just here in this big space. So it is possible to climb up to the top of the mountain and see this great big vista. But it does take doing this practice. And one of the functions of the practice is described by this great word, unification. So do you have any questions about that? Anything that you'd like to say or anything else? Anything at all? You're welcome. So what's the difference between unification and concentration? Unification is one of the factors that come into play as we get concentrated. The word concentration in Buddhism is samadhi, and the connotations of samadhi are a little different than, I think, the English word concentration. So it might not be the best translation, the word samadhi, concentration. Because many people, when they hear the word concentration, think of a laser focus of the mind. Like, you know, you're really going to bore down and really see it or focus on it. Samadhi is a state of being absorbed or being settled, where we're deeply composed. And so it's more like the whole system that we have, all our faculties, compose itself on whatever we're focusing on. So we get composed on the breath. And so this sense of being composed is another way of saying unified. So unification is one aspect. Another aspect is the focus, the attention on the particular thing, so in the breathing, for example. Other factors that come together with concentration are joy and happiness and equanimity. Confidence is another thing. So there's different factors that come into play in the state of samadhi. And there's different kinds of samadhi, but all of them require unification. But once we're unified, then we can go through different levels of samadhi, different levels of concentration. Is that an adequate answer? Yes, please.
In my own practice right now, I'm working on this contrast between being settled in myself and satisfied with what's here and just what you're talking about, that confidence feeling, and this pull I have for connection to others. They feel so diametrically opposed. There doesn't seem to be wisdom in that. I'm confused, and that's exactly where my work is bringing me right now.
Uh-huh.
Can you
Great.
Help me with that?
Yeah. I don't know if I can help you with it, but I can give you some ideas.
Okay. Good enough.
Few things. When there's a really strong tendency within us, like this pull towards other people, for example, then that's often a good thing to bring a lot of mindfulness to. So to let the settling, the focus of attention, be on the feelings inside, the inner experience of this pull that you have. So but the trick of it, though, is not to get into analytical mode and think about it and try to solve it or understand it analytically, but rather to really feel, what is this experience like and where in your body is it? And to allow it. And the image I like to use is taking your two hands as if your hands were awareness, and coming from underneath and just holding whatever that pull is, or that, and then start seeing more deeply, feel your way more deeply, what's really going on there, and what's the emotions that come with it. Do you have any sense of what emotion comes with it?
Love, desire, this thing about connection. It's
So
like reawakening in me towards a number of different people. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, oh, are we hardwired for this?
Mm-hmm. So the so there might be a strong pull or desire for love and connection. Some of it is our natural tendency, and some of it is attachment. So if you can't let go of it when you're meditating, it means you're attached. However, letting go of meditation doesn't mean that's not an important part of who we are. And if it's something that has been short-circuited before, something we haven't had enough because we've repressed it or denied it or something, then it becomes very important not just to let go of it in meditation. That's almost maybe, if that's all we do, it's kind of disrespectful for it. It might need time to be expressed, to find a way to live in our lives. But that giving it a lot of time to live in our life should be outside of meditation, because if you're trying to, unless if you do what I said, you bring your attention to the inner feeling of it, and you start seeing what's there, then part of that might be some inner goodness, some inner nice feeling, love, for example, that it might be really nice to make room for and let it grow in meditation. Just as you're sitting there, it grows. But some of it might be fear. It might be greed. Might be other things involved, and the two might be hand in hand. Or there might be fear that's connected to the desire for connection. And so if you sit there and really are present for a while, you might be able to tease apart these different aspects and then learn how to maybe make space for what's healthy and put aside what is not healthy in it. And the other thing, though, meditation, so that's one way to do it. The other way is to really be willing to let go of it, put it aside entirely, and develop a concentration on something like the breath. And the little carrot that can maybe encourage you that maybe it's okay to do that and put aside this desire for connection is that you'll be able to connect to people much better after you're settled. So
nice carrot, thank you.
Yeah. Yes, please, if you can wait for the mic.
I found in my practice, when trying to engage in a more concentration sort of style practice, as opposed to kind of attending to whatever thoughts or emotion arise and sitting with them, I find with concentration, I go back and forth between feeling like I'm sort of staying with the breath and concentrated, and then kind of getting carried away by evaluating myself and saying, am I concentrated? Am I doing a good job concentrating? And that sort of allows the practice itself to become almost a whole period of anxiety and
sure.
its own kind of its own battle. So I'm wondering, I feel like that might be a common problem, that evaluation.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm wondering what you have, thoughts you have on that.
Great. So it's a common problem, issue. And so if something persists like this, then what you want to do is you want to turn your attention in a respectful way and investigate this tendency to evaluate. And again, the investigation doesn't have to be so cognitive. You're not thinking about it so much. You could do some. But it's to feel your way, and particularly to feel what is the tension associated with it. Because you're not going to be evaluating unless there's tension, and there's probably some emotion involved. It might be fear, some anxiety, am I doing well enough? It might be ambition. Sometimes it's competitive meditation. Am I doing as well as the person next to me? And so, what is going on when you're evaluating? And emotionally, what's going on with your beliefs? Why do you think it's so important to get concentrated? Or why are you constantly looking, and what are you searching for? What does it say about your sense of self? Is your sense of self secure? Is it insecure? And so the insecurity is coming to play. So to really kind of, with a loving way, very generous to yourself, to begin exploring what is actually going on when you do all this evaluation. And then, in particular, to feel what it's like physically to do it. If you're really that involved with evaluation, probably there's some kind of tension or pressure somewhere in your system, in your muscles, in your brain, somewhere. And then learn how to relax that. Learn to relax the physical tension connected to doing that kind of thinking. Because if you simply try to let go of it and go back to your breath, and the tension is still there, the tension is like a factory that will just pump out more thoughts. It's almost like the thoughts are the symptom and not the cause. And the cause is the tension. And so to learn to identify the tension or the underlying emotion that can be relaxed, then you can go back to the breathing. Does that make some sense? One of the really nice things about this mindfulness practice is that, yes, we'd like to get concentrated, but the very things that make it really difficult to get concentrated, we don't have to be upset about it. It becomes something we bring our mindfulness to. So this is an example. And one of the things we like to do in this kind of practice is to not see anything as a problem. It's just something else to be mindful of. In fact, to see anything as a problem is one of the ways of getting in the way of getting unified. Because it's just more thought. The idea there's a problem is just a kind of complicated thought that's not needed. Yes, please, right behind you.
My question relates to, I feel that life has a lot of gray areas, I think all of us would agree. And be it Buddhism or other major religions have a code of ethics that you need to follow or rules. And what I'm finding is that as you go through life or as you go about your life, you sometimes make mistakes or things are done to you. How do you develop what I would call an iterative resilience? You know, you just keep basically trying or making better, just like with the meditation. Without feeling like the margin of error is just getting smaller and smaller.
What's wrong with having a margin of error become smaller?
Well, you know, you're trying to basically improve, basically, on the rules or the things that you follow. How do you not judge yourself, basically, is what I'm trying to say.
Oh, that way. And I hope the margin of error gets smaller. I mean, for example, I mean, our speech, right? I mean, how truthful is our speech? And so I mean, when some earlier in life, we might be much more loose about how truthful we are. And then as we develop in Buddhism, the tendency for people is to become more truthful. And one of the reasons for that is not because it's a rule to be truthful, but as we get more settled in ourselves, more at home and more of this unified feeling, we feel the cost on ourselves to be untruthful. And it just doesn't feel good. And so we want to have a smaller margin of error. We want to catch it and notice that it's, I don't want to go there. And people become more and more sensitive, and even the slightest little, you know, untruth becomes too much. And that's a sign of maturity. So, but how not to do it to get it being hard on yourself?
Yes.
Yeah. I think that the Buddhist approach is to, when you do something which you feel caused harm, is not to be weighed down by it. And the Buddhist approach is to always be forward-looking. In this way, we look at what we did in the past just enough to learn from it and be inspired to do better in the future.
That should work.
But you don't want to ignore what you did. You don't want to ignore your mistakes. You want to learn from it, but you don't want to be weighed down by it. There's no need to be weighed down for it. And in Buddhism, they say that guilt is an unnecessary emotion. Guilt has no place, they say, in Buddhism.
I agree. What happens is, just as you were saying about being truthful, or you could choose any other aspect of being, is that it's kind of uncomfortable that, you know, you talked about it's a good thing to get that margin of error smaller, but it seems like the space within which you can behave gets, like, smaller and smaller. Like, you have to be so in the straight and narrow, you know.
Oh, I see. Yeah. I see. Well, you know, it depends on what your I think that the idea is that as we mature in this practice, we become softer, or we become more open, or become freer. And so there's much more room, it's much more okay to have a smaller margin of error. So it's like this, there's an analogy that the Buddha gave, is if you take a tablespoon of salt, and put it in a cup of water, the cup of water becomes undrinkable. But if you took a tablespoon of salt and put it in Lake Tahoe, you know, you can still drink the water, supposedly. You know, it doesn't get so salty, right? So when the mind or the heart gets really big, then we're not going to be troubled by the tablespoon of salt so much. Not being troubled means we don't, you know, accept it or go along with it. There's more space. It's more okay. That's one of the wonderful things about this practice, is that as people become more sensitive to their ethical behavior and more wanting to care for it, take responsibility for it, it's more okay. They're more relaxed about it also. They're not carrying guilt. They're not criticizing themselves for it. They're not making an identity for themselves for it. You know, they're not bothering with the thought, I'm a bad person. That's just a waste of thinking to say I'm a bad person. Why? You know, rather than just look and, well, why say anything about yourself at all? Just say, oh, look, I lied to my best friend. You know, that didn't feel good. Let's see how I can do better. Maybe I need to apologize and try to do better. As opposed to, oh, shoot, I lied to my best friend. I'm such a lousy, no good person, and I keep doing this, and I'm just a failure of a human being, and what am I going to do about it? And I mean, it's like spiraling, those kinds of thoughts are not helpful. And so the hope is, as this practice develops for people, there's a lot more freedom to hold it all. And the margin of error becomes better and better. It's more and more joyful. And it becomes a joyful thing to do better. It's a joyful thing to be more ethical. Joyful thing to not succumb to all these things, as opposed to a duty or a should. Or does that make some sense?
Yes. Thank you.
So one more, and then we can stop.
I've been kind of practicing different practices, and I'm trying to figure out what my goal is for meditating. If it's just to still the mind, there is something I heard. I've been practicing praying too.
Can I tell you what?
I've been practicing praying as well as meditation, and I heard that, you know, a saying that praying, that you're communicating to, you know, whatever I believe in, and then meditating is kind of listening for the answer. And so I'm like kind of confused, like, do I just still my mind and kind of go on this space where I'm just at ease, or am I trying to paying attention, trying to listen to something internal?
Yeah, those are good questions. I appreciate it, what you're saying. And my preferred way of answering something like that, I don't know if it'll be a fit for you, but is just a little bit explore what other people say the purpose is and what to do. Just a little bit, you know, because you got to get your feet wet a little bit, find out a little what's going on. But the real answer to your question should be from within yourself, and for you to begin to discover what do you want. What do you want with your life, your precious life? What do you want your life to be about? What's really important for you? And once you have a clearer sense of that, then we can talk about meditation, prayer, different options for what can support you in pursuing what you think is important for you. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay, so thank you. And if I was a little bit calmer or ineloquent than usual, it's because I'm kind of still in this retreat mode. And so the words aren't quite there. Thank you.